Just another very special episode of the Serious TV Drama Podcast, but dare I say, the most special one in months, if not years. I'm Scott, and again, if not the number one reason I have decreed the extra specialness of this episode, he's certainly in the top three reasons. I could come up with a whole lot of descriptions that range from goofy to gallant, but it all comes down to this. If not for this man, there would be no Serious TV Drama Podcast, period. Which means he's the one you should all be blaming, not me. And obviously the only person I could possibly be talking about, returning here to, let's call it, the virtual STVD studios, for the first time in, I believe it's over 4 months now, welcome back, Dan. Hey, Dan.
Hey, good evening. How's it going?
It is going well. It's not uncommon for me to be excited about doing a podcast. It's rare when there's like multiple reasons for me to be excited. And and your return is, well, like I just said, it's genuinely in the top three. I'm not going to say what the top three are, but it might be number one, might be number two. Cause you have chosen, I would say, probably the most perfect podcast for your, don't call it a comeback, but I'm going to call it that. Because it was more than 5 years ago, we had quite the summer talking about the long lamented and canceled way too soon TV series Hannibal. And what's that sound? That's weird. Don't know what that was. Anyway, as this is the latest installment of the greatest TV drama episodes of all time, it does please me to no end to say that the second season finale of Hannibal, which was titled Mizumono, I hope that's how you pronounce it, has cut its way into the countdown to land at a sweet meat, 16. And it's really extra cool because we only actually podcasted about season 3. So this episode that we're going to be discussing tonight, in many ways, it's kind of the episode that kind of catapulted us into doing that podcast the following year, I would say,
Yeah, we were interested in talking about it even before Chio was on the show.
Okay, sound again. I don't know if that it's kind of a weird hydraulic thing, like an electric wheelchair or something. Anyway, it's gone. Anyway, everyone who listens to this silly podcast, we always get crazy noises, It's kind of a trope, cats meowing, fire engines and ambulances, sirens at all hours of the night. It's New York, so big deal. Anyway, before we start, I should probably run through my usual little disclaimer here. Anyway, going to do my disclaimer and there it is again. What is that? I don't know what that is. I know what it is. He's not supposed to. Yeah, I guess I had hinted online that someone was supposed to be returning to the podcast, but I don't think that's going to happen, so I don't know if that's him or not, but it's no big deal. He would have gotten under my skin anyway, so. So anyway, my disclaimer is, guess who's back, bitches? Oh, no. Oh, no.
Hey, welcome back to the show, Mason. Nice to have you for dinner.
Yeah, it's a comeback for us both. Maybe we can ditch the, tight ass over here and do a real podcast. Oh, it's been so long. Hey, did you watch that Hamilton over the summer?
Yes, very good.
Yeah, I prepared a little something for the listeners. Yeah. My lovely singing voice here.
I like how it's Hamilton, too, with this big specific.
Well, I was misled. I thought it was going to be about pigs, but, there was one part that appealed to me, so let me try this. I've come back. Did you miss me? I put the VD in the STVD. I've come back. Now it won't suck. You won't have to listen to this long-winded schmuck.
Hey, all right. Yep, Mason, no one tuned into this podcast to hear you, I guess we'll call that, sing.
Please, no one's tuned into this podcast for 5 years. Plus, who says tuned in? It's a podcast, you putz. But anyway, so I've been listening, because, you know, that way you have at least one listener. And you like your little lists, I've noticed.
Yes, I do like my lists. And we're trying to do a countdown podcast right here, if you'd only say.
Well, people, they know all that. But they don't know one of my lists. So here I am to give you the top three favorite songs of Mason Verger.
We're not doing...
No, shut. Let me finish. Number three, Piggies by the Beatles. Oh, so good. Number two, War Pigs by Black Sabbath. Oh, it's such a good one. And number one, the number one song in Mason Verger's heart and soul, it's Shake It Off.
Shake It Off? The Taylor Swift song? That doesn't have any kind of pig connotation.
Oh, but I would like that little piggy to go wee 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 all over.
All right. Let's get this podcast back on track here. Anyway. So, like I was trying to say, I usually start off with a little disclaimer about the countdown for anyone who hasn't listened to the previous installments in this series. I'll make it quick because Verger has used up quite a bit of our airtime here. Just try to make it clear that this isn't about my personal choices, my personal favorites or biases. I actually went through several articles online from publications everyone's heard of, like Entertainment Weekly and so on, and some less, you know, IGTV, stuff based in both the US and UK, because everyone at some point or another has done lists of this nature over the years. I also use different websites that do kind of ranking for specific series. So, like, which was the top ranked episode, you know, either it be on Ranker.com or IMDb.com and so on. Put all that information together, tried to cull through it, and figure out what were the quote-unquote greatest TV drama episodes of all time. And as we all know, I've also had to eliminate certain series because if we have already extensively covered an episode on this podcast, it therefore doesn't qualify for the countdown. So that's why, you know, the obvious example is that's why there will be no Better Call Saul episode in the countdown, because we've already done every episode of Better Call Saul. So that's pretty much it. So as per usual, before we get to the actual episode, you know, I always like to do, I'll do a little Hannibal speak here, a little aperitif covering the basic history of the series.
Oh, that should be my job.
No, Mason, not now.
It's like, yeah, you just read about it. I lived it, baby. It's like, and you just drooling dipsy doodle.
That, you know what? That's it.
What do you think?
All right, so that should keep him quiet for a while. So where was I? Dan, you still there?
Yes, I'm here.
All right, so Hannibal history. Let's see if we can get through this quickly here. Well, Hannibal ran for 3 seasons on NBC from 2013 through the summer of 2015. As most everyone knows, in fact, forget most, everyone knows it was based and inspired by characters from the books that were written by Thomas Harris. You know, books were Red Dragon, Songs of the Lambs, Hannibal, and Hannibal Rising. Although, save for the occasional wink and a nod, they never really touched on Silence of the Lambs, mainly due to that story and the characters, specifically Clarice Starling and Jamie Gumm, were still legally held by MGM. Now, if you guys do recall our podcast back in 2015, I went through some great lengths to describe the unique situation that pertained to the series that helped explain, at least to a certain extent, how the hell a series like this ever even made its way to network television, especially NBC. you know, so suffice to say, much if not all the financing came from overseas production companies, such as Gaumont International Television, the Dino De Laurentiis Company. So at the time, the cost to NBC was far less than the bulk of their programming. But as we also probably all recall, it was kind of an awkward marriage. Hannibal was yet another one of those series, I would say, that was ahead of its time. The sort that we look at now and would say, hey, if that had come about just a few years later, it probably would have been a major hit on a streaming service like, you know, like a Netflix or Amazon Prime. You know, it's the kind of thing that we say about shows like, I don't know, like Arrested Development or Firefly and probably a handful of others. And as we spoke about him quite a bit back in 2015, we also will recall that the man behind the Hannibal TV series was Brian Fuller. Now, Dan, I know you'll be the probably would be the first to highlight this, that Fuller first earned his TV creative stripes writing a number of episodes for both Star Trek Deep Space Nine and Star Trek Voyager. I mean, I know you watched those when they originally aired, but were you attuned enough at that time? Because maybe I don't think even I was, you know, quite frankly, as to who was actually writing specific episodes where you could tell what the difference was or who. Oh, that's a good writer. This is going to be a good episode, kind of a situation.
Yeah, no, I didn't really know any of that back then. Like, I know that like back then, pretty. I mean, you'd know that like Ron Moore was like writing Klingon episodes of Next Generation, but like other than that, there really wasn't like anything that stood out at the time.
Right. I think it's one of those things that we know it later, and then when we go back and watch, and we realize, oh, you kind of like even pick up on little things like, oh, that's kind of a Brian Fuller kind of a thing there. After his foray into Trek, he did go on to co-create a very short-lived series called Wonderfalls, and he was even a producer and occasional writer for Heroes, believe it or not. He actually wrote one of the really great episodes of Heroes. I think it was, what was it called? It was Company Man or something like that. I think it was the one that was a lot of it was about the horn-rimmed glasses dude. Anyway, he went on to make a much bigger and more memorable splash, being the guy behind the series Pushing Daisies. You know, beyond his admirable work on the writing of that series, I would say that was a series that really bore what's become a trademark for Brian Fuller TV shows, a very distinct and bigger-than-TV sense of visual style and flair, which is something certainly Pushing Daisies was known for. After a few failed series attempts, he then helped to shepherd Hannibal to the small screen. And, you know, and just a slight postscript on him, you know, after Hannibal, his artistic vision was next beheld in that first season of that Starz series, American Gods. Of course, he did leave that show during the pre-production phase of the second season. He seems to have these issues sometimes. He keeps leaving shows. And he later warped back into the Star Trek universe, because I believe he's both a creator, producer, and occasional writer for the current series on CBS All Access that you're starting to watch now, and I have yet to see Star Trek Discovery.
Yeah, I think he kind of like bailed out on that relatively quick too. Like he was around for the beginning, and I don't think he really does much with it anymore.
I believe you. I think you're absolutely right about that, because I just know that's kind of a thing with him. It's always one reason or another. It's in it maybe a disagreement with the network or the service, or there's some little drama. I don't want to call Mr. Fuller a drama queen. I wouldn't say that, but it does seem to follow him around.
He probably owes a lot of child support and just goes around like it's all these like bills knocked up and then just bails.
Well, you know, as Hannibal, as one might expect, it's obviously got quite the cult following from season to season. Lord knows, fellow, I guess we call ourselves Fannibals, God help us. Like myself, we campaigned long and hard for a fourth season back in 2015, which, as of yet, has never happened. I will wrap up this little history segment by saying, now, a few years ago, it sounded as if Fuller's intent, as many of us assumed, or at least suspected, was to get into the Silence of the Lambs storylines in the next season, provided they could secure those aforementioned character rights from MGM. But in a fairly recent interview with him, just literally just a few weeks ago, He didn't seem to mention that at all when he was, you know, musing on the hypothetical possibility of either returning for a fourth season down the line or a movie or even a series of movies. Now, I don't know if it just means he's abandoned that idea or he just didn't feel like talking about it again and, you know, create a trending topic on Twitter. I don't know. But, so I didn't know quite how I felt about that. But then again, there's part of me that's like, well, we've kind of seen Silence of the Lambs. I'm just curious what he would do with, you know, a new version of Clarice Starling. And maybe he would work the Will Graham character into that as well. But we either will ever know. I have no idea.
Yeah, it'd be nice. But maybe someday. I mean, like everything else comes back. So maybe, it's at least possible.
Yeah, the thing that I think almost benefits the idea that it could still happen, even if it's, X number of years removed. I mean, when you watch, for example, when you see or read Silence of the Lambs, you never get the impression Lecter's only been incarcerated for a little while. You know, you figure he's been there for quite some time. So if it is whatever number of years later, that works fine. So I have no, it can work. And I know the actors were all excited to do it at some point, although I think Mads Mikkelsen's dance card is slowly getting filled up with other projects over the next few years. I know he's now going to be, he's taking over the Johnny Depp role in those Fantastic Beasts, Harry Potter movies or something. And I mentioned it online myself, but a good friend of mine, we were talking about Hannibal the other day, and he said, he would be a good choice for either, with the MCU, when they do their own version of either Magneto or Doctor Doom. And I was like, oh God, that he is a good choice. I never even thought of that. I was so busy thinking like Viggo Mortensen and those type of actors. Like, I could totally see Mikkelsen doing either one of those roles.
Yeah, I suppose, maybe even though he was in Doctor Strange, maybe they'd use him. I'm not sure.
That is true. He was in Doctor Strange, but I wouldn't put it past him to reuse the actor. I think they can get away with it. That might lend itself more to Doctor Doom then, because he'll presumably have the mask on for most of the time. But I wish I had thought of that before I said it out loud. No, actually, it's perfect. All right. So it was, I know for me, I mean, you started getting back to rewatching the series, about a week or two before I got to it. How did you feel when you were watching it again? I mean, did you remember most of this stuff? Did you look at it more critically, or do you think you liked it even more than you saw it the first time?
Yeah, I'd say I had forgot about a lot of it. I mean, I guess, we watched a lot since then. So, I forgot about the various, murder scenes that they'd run into in some of the cases. I remembered some of it, like the violin guy and whatever, but I'd kind of forgotten about how it all went together. So I watched it with a more critical eye, but I'd say I enjoyed it more this time. And I kind of felt like less of a distinction between season one and two. It just kind of feels like one long season to me. I mean, but not because of the way I watched it, just kind of like, it just doesn't feel like there's much of a separation between the two seasons. I mean, it just, it feels kind of like just one long arc. So,
right. Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah,
it's not really how I remembered it back then. And, there's a pretty big difference between season two and the first half of season three, of course, that, doesn't really feel like, I'm sure I'd still be quite critical of season three, the first half, and the Italy stuff and the pointless lesbian scene that's so lame that I can't even remember which characters are in it. I just remember how stupid it was.
I think it might have been Margot and Alana, maybe. I suspect those were the two. If it wasn't for the fact that I've got so many other things I need to get to watching, whether it be the different shows I got to binge for this series of podcasts, as well as other things, that are just like, there's new shows on. Oh no, God, I gotta watch The Crown now, or this or that, whatever. I haven't watched The Mandalorian yet. All those kind of things. I finished the first two seasons again, and I think my opinion was pretty much similar to what you just said. There were things I remembered, there were things I forgot. All I could think was, I know I liked it back then because I kept talking about it. I feel like I liked it even more this time. And I think it's also the different type of viewing experience by watching one after the other, which was certainly not something I had experienced before. That was when we had to wait a week, and you're trying to remember what happened in the previous week, and right now it's, you know, it's one right after the other, and they kind of just flow right into one another. It's not so much that the episode might necessarily end on like a big, oh my gosh, cliffhanger-y kind of thing where I got, you know, oh, I got to watch the next one. It doesn't have quite the Breaking Bad kind of quality, but it just feels like it's kind of like, you know, just one nice wave you're just, you know, just coasting on. And that way it gave me time to really appreciate, you know, some of the performances probably more than I did. For example, I probably spent so much time thinking and talking about Mads Mikkelsen's performance as Lecter back in the day, because he had the hard job of taking over a role that was made iconic by Anthony Hopkins. But now I was able to focus on, you know, like Hugh Dancy is really good. He's really good on the show. He's playing a guy on the edge for so much, and he's totally believable on it. You know, or Lawrence Fishburne is always a great presence no matter what. He's got that kind of automatic gravitas kind of thing. Or a smaller part, Eddie Izzard. How much fun is Eddie Izzard on this show?
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Another good thing about watching it kind of all, you know, all in a big bunch, binging it, I guess is the term. It's just like, you know, all these characters are being subjected to, like, you know, Lecter's mind games and stuff, and it just kind of feels more relentless when it's just happening, you know, over and over and over again, instead of having like a week break, you know. So just like seeing Will like steadily decline and everybody else getting fucked with, it just never really stops, and it's, you know, he never lets up in the show, so you just kind of feel more of that this way.
Absolutely. And that's, it's, I love that you mentioned that, because that's actually the main thing. And I'm kind of, I wanted to smack myself for this, because it's one thing for me to have forgotten, you know, a certain murder or a certain character that only appeared in a one shot or whatever. Big deal. I had forgotten just how malevolent, he's referred to, I think, maybe by the Eddie Izzard character as the devil. He really is the devil. Because what I had forgotten, and it's kind of like, how can you forget something which was like the main thrust of the entire series, that he's behind everything. It's not just occasionally. Every episode he's screwing around with things and you know, puppet strings and whatnot. I was like, oh, I had forgotten. And it made me, and watching that made me marvel at the overall series that much more. And I'll tell you one of the reasons why. A few weeks ago when we, I think it was number 19 in the countdown, Jamie joined me for that one, and we were talking about the season 4 finale of Dexter. Your favorite show, Dexter. You know, the one you think is the one you said was better than The Wire. Anyway, I kid.
That was CJ level trolling, but like, unlike him, I actually like grew up and realized that, you know, you could do things that weren't just trolling.
Thank you. And he hasn't stopped. Anyway, the reason I bring it up, because one of the points that was being made during that podcast, I think Jamie said it, and I was kind of going along with it. And it's not incorrect, but just something about the audacity of a TV series where your main character is, well, he's a serial killer and who would traditionally be a villain, but in this show he's actually, you know, the hero because of how he goes about his actions and you know, and so on and so forth. And even though there are some exceptions to that rule, whatever. And, you know, and I agreed. It was. But then you watch Hannibal. And yes, one could try to say, well, you can kind of say they're kind of, you know, Will Graham and Hannibal Lecter, they're, you know, they kind of share, you know, main character status on the show because it's about the two of them. Yeah, you could say that, although the writer in me says, that's very nice to say, but guess what? It really is really about being one. There's only one main character. I don't care if you think they share the same amount of screen time. It's only one. And you could make the case, therefore it must be Will Graham, but then part of me says, yeah, but the show's called Hannibal. And having the show really focus on someone who is, well, kind of sort of evil. And watching these two seasons, like watching like 26 episodes of it within a few days' time, you know, when you're kind of drowning in it, like, you know, like the weird black liquid that we see characters drowning in the show. I'm going, I can't believe, even though NBC didn't have to pay that much initially for it, I still can't believe they put this on the air.
Yeah. It's pretty crazy. And, you know, like I joked a lot back when we were podcasting how I wished, like, when it was getting canceled that the Food Network would pick it up. Mm-hmm. But, like, no, like, you know, this is really, it's nothing like Guy Fieri or Bobby Flay. I mean, it just would fit with their fucking audience. I know it'd be funny, but it's just such a brutal fucking show.
Well, you know, they would like to have a chef who's named Bobby Flay on it because there's lots of flaying on this show. Oh man, that's one of the things I had forgotten, just the level of gore. And I thought, you know, oof. I thought I got a bit immune to that or desensitized, that's the phrase, because of, you know, remembering like watching back when I used to watch like The Walking Dead, for example, or certain moments we might have seen on a show like a Game of Thrones or a few others like that. But this, there's some really disturbing stuff that they do throughout the course of this series. So it takes my breath away that this ever made it to air. I mean, I guess in a way we should consider ourselves lucky. We even got 39 episodes of it. And I you know what? I will eventually rewatch season 3 because I'm curious if I might lighten up on it a little bit. Other than that, the notor. The only thing I remember about that first half of the season was the lesbian scene that you mentioned. And again, it's got nothing to do with, you know, it being a lesbian scene. It seemed to go on and it was just like, why are we going on with this and whatever? That and snails. I remember there was something where it seemed like there was a lot of snails throughout the first half of season 3 where I thought maybe the show should just be called Snails now.
Yeah, maybe it wouldn't. The Italy stuff wouldn't drag on so much this time. You know, if you can get it over with in, you know, 4 hours instead of 6 weeks.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm thinking. I mean, I will say I did watch some of the first episode of season 3, and I actually watched maybe the first half of it, and then I realized, oh yeah, that's right. Now I'm remembering because they don't pick up on all the loose threads and what happened at the end of the season 2 finale until the next episode. They actually made us wait another week, which might have annoyed us a little bit at the time, just a little bit.
I kind of liked when Lost did it in some other shows, so I don't know. Didn't bother
too much. It's not uncommon. No, I agree. It's not uncommon. Hey, I can go all the way back to, you know, the mid-80s. You know, guess what, kids? We didn't find out who shot JR in the very first episode when Dallas came back. They made you wait too, so it's certainly not unusual. But I was kind of enjoying what I was watching. I was like, going, oh, I thought I had a big issue with the season 3, but then I was listening back to our old podcast, you know, a little bit here and there, and I heard what we were talking about. I was like, oh yeah, the snails. Oh, God, the snails. I forgot all about those goddamn snails. The only other thing I want to mention before I get into getting into season 2, another thing that kind of makes the show stand out, I could be wrong about this because maybe there's another show that deals with food, whatever. It's probably one of, if not the only dramatic series that one of the very first credits you see at the end is they have a culinary consultant on the show. And it's been sometimes referred to when you go into articles about the show, sometimes they refer to it as a cannibal culinary consultant. Maybe they're just going for the alliterative nature of having three C's. I don't know about that. Because that's why the whole Food Network thing would have made sense, because they spend so much time and the way they shoot the food and how it's prepared with such loving care. That's almost as overboard. That's more overboard than any sense of gore or anything else on the show. But I actually ate watching Hannibal several times. It didn't bother me.
Yeah, we've got a strong stomach, so I suppose. Yeah. But yeah, the food stuff is really interesting in the show, though. I mean, you know, he definitely takes the time to serve some good meals up, and they definitely take the time to show it.
Oh yeah. So as we're trying to make our way to the actual episode, what I usually like to do with these podcasts is kind of set the stage by talking about what happened throughout, in shorthand, what happened in season two that led us to the episode. Because this is the finale of the season, so kind of got to talk about what happened during the season. First thing I noticed, again, something I forgot about, and don't worry, this is no episode-by-episode breakdown, trust me. But I have to mention the very first episode of the season literally kicks off with showing the whole kitchen-based battle between Hannibal and Jack Crawford, you know, and, you know, ending with, like, Crawford being trapped, I guess it's in the pantry, his neck is gushing blood as Hannibal's trying to batter down the door, and then all of a sudden it's, you know, 12 weeks earlier. Now, putting aside the fact that they never do any other flashbacks like that for the rest of the season, which I don't mind because that would have felt a little bit too damage-y to me, I'm going to say right now, yes, and let's see if you agree or not, I don't know, I kind of don't think they should have done that. That's my opinion. Because they show the entire fight.
So, yeah, and then when you get to the episode itself, the fight's edited a little bit more. You know, I think the fight's better in the flash forward than it is when we see it in the finale, and that's a little off for me. I mean, yeah. I enjoyed it at the time. It was, you know, and it's like the best fight like ever, but it's still kind of like, you know, maybe right, wasn't necessary.
And I think this might be one of the only situations that maybe watching it as a binge almost hurts it as opposed to the way it was originally viewed, because back in 2014, I guess, when this was airing, we had to wait, I guess, at least 12 weeks before we got to that episode. So we probably didn't remember it that clearly. I mean, we remembered it, but there's a big difference between 12 weeks later or 12 hours later or a day later. It's pretty vivid in your mind. So I don't know. I kept thinking, you know, if you're going to maybe just show like the final 30 seconds of it, and therefore we'd have a concept like, I don't even know what the hell's going on. And then we build to it, but whatever. They know better than me. Blah, blah, blah. So over the course of the actual season, Will Graham who was both mentally and I would say cranially deteriorating throughout season one. He finds himself, he's still locked up in the Baltimore State Hospital for the criminally insane. As we will have seen, he was essentially framed for several murders by Hannibal, including apparently, at the time, their mutual obsession, that the young girl, Abigail Hobbs. Now, most of the season, it's pretty much Will Graham has essentially switched roles from how we know Hannibal Lecter from the movies and the first two books. You know, he's always been seen as the one who's the prisoner, you know, the murderous psychopath, that's consulted on murder cases. Now that's Will Graham. And now Hannibal's the one who's like supposedly at least assisting the FBI, which would normally be Graham's role. But throughout the season, there are these other, I don't know, monkey wrenches that are thrown into the mix, I guess. You know, everything from the return of the presumed dead FBI trainee, Miriam Hobbs, who I personally always felt kind of a poor Clarice Starling substitute at the time. You know, maybe it's just me, don't know.
And I agree.
I always thought that's where they were going with that, even though they didn't quite go there. And of course, as we mentioned earlier, Eddie Izzard's character, the fellow murderer, Dr. Paul Gideon, you know, wonderful little character. He was someone who initially was, you know, I guess deluded into thinking, you know, he wasn't just the guy who horrifically murdered his family, but in fact, he's the infamous Chesapeake Killer, you know, a serial killer that the FBI had yet to catch, you know, the number one guy on Jack Crawford's obsession list, you know, probably just as important to him as caring for his terminally ill wife. And of course, those of us, the viewers, we know, oh yeah, Hannibal's a Chesapeake Killer. We know that. And of course, Hannibal eventually is again up to his framing ways, you know, switching from Will, he ends up framing Dr. Paul Chilton, you know, the arrogant ass who runs the asylum. He's set up to look like the Chesapeake Killer. you know, as well, you know, and also being the person who committed the murders that Will was accused of, that leads to Will's release. And then we see that what was already a bizarre bond between he and Hannibal gets, you know, on the surface, they grow closer, maybe more inexplicable. Because I would say that it's hard to ever be sure just where Will's head is at when it comes to Hannibal. Which I think is probably, it is probably one of the good things about the series overall that, you know, we're not positive. We think he's still, you know, good, the good versus the evil here, but maybe not so much. As we get to the home stretch of the season, we do meet some other bizarre people, namely Margot and the person who crashed the podcast earlier, the soon to be nearly faceless Mason Verger. And the storyline certainly shines a light on the increasingly disturbing relationship between Hannibal and Will at that point. Because we are even led to believe that Will has gone as far as to kill the tabloid web journalist Freddie Lowndes. But as we near the end of the season, we realize this has all been a long con cooked up by Will and Jack in order to catch Hannibal, which is what gets us to the season two finale, Mizumono, which I'll just quickly mention was directed by David Slade, who, beyond directing movies like Hard Candy and 30 Days of Night, he actually also directed a couple Black Mirror episodes, an episode of Breaking Bad, of all things, and a handful of Hannibal episodes, including the pilot. And the episode itself was co-written by Brian Fuller and a fellow named Steve Lightfoot. Love that name, Lightfoot. He also worked on several Hannibal episodes. And that dude went on to work on, he did several episodes of Narcos. And then I guess he created the series, and wrote for the series, the Punisher on Netflix, which I've never gotten around to watching. All right. So let's actually get to the episode that we're supposed to be talking about here. So, again, once we got to this episode, I was so looking forward to it because it's been so long. All I really remembered were the last several minutes. I didn't quite remember the first, I don't know, 35 to 40 minutes leading up to it. So I had kind of like the almost the breathless anticipation that you get when you haven't seen something at all. I was just like, I don't remember. I don't know. Are there the reveals? Is there, I know that I was like, I remember there's a mistake that's made that puts Hannibal onto what they're doing. And I couldn't remember what it was until it happened. You know, that kind of a thing. How was your memory when you got down to watching this episode?
Yeah, I'd kind of forgotten about a lot of it, but it all started to kind of click into place a bit as time got closer, and I kind of forgot, like, you know, some of the like stuff that was, you know, with like Mason Verger was going to be in season three, so I was kind of like wondering how the timeline was all going to end up lining up, just because it had been, you know, I guess it's been quite a while since we watched it, but yeah.
Been 5 or 6 years. So the episode begins. I love the technique they use. They kind of cross cut these two conversations between Will and Hannibal and Will and Jack. And then, which eventually ends on this nice little split screen of both Jack and Hannibal, as well as Will, really emphasizing the confusion of, you know, which side is he on? And more importantly, because they actually say it, you know, specifically in this moment, which side will he choose when it comes down to it? And I think one of the hallmarks of the show is like, I know what we would assume, but can we be totally positive? They had screwed with us so much already for the first two seasons. And to a certain extent, like, you know, it wouldn't surprise me. For me personally, the only thing I could rely on is like, well, I having been a fan of the books from, you know, practically my childhood and reading Red Dragon as a teenager, I kept remembering. Okay, I remember there's this whole thing where Hannibal guts Will with like a linoleum knife or something. That's kind of major in the history of these characters. They got to get to that. I was wondering, is it going to be this season? Is it going to be the following season? Turns out to be this season in this episode, whatever. After that, you know, again, I think for both seasons, they keep playing on the thing where he keeps seeing, the killer that he shot, you know, early on in season one, Hobbs again on the porch. So he's consistently haunted by this vision of this guy, you know, Abigail's dad, whatever. And I was like, okay, there he is again. It's like, it's interesting how he gets his head so wrapped around, you know, being revisited by someone who, you know, in many ways is kind of like the polar opposite of killers compared to the way Hannibal is in my mind. Although I guess they both make use of their victims. So I guess maybe they do have something in common now that I think about it.
Yeah.
After that, we'll see Hannibal visiting Bella. I know that was one of your, had to be one of your favorite things about the show, because I know you're a big Gillian Anderson fan. And,
yeah.
And she was, I always enjoyed her on this series. And I was, again, I remember one of the things I did remember about the finale is like, oh yeah, I'm wondering how they're going to do this on Netflix, because this was the episode where you had to wait through the end credits to see a little bit more, which is kind of uncommon for TV shows. And I was appreciative that they didn't cut away from that, that they kept it on screen before going to the next episode. Anyway, as we go through the episode, you know, you get the stuff, you know, you get scenes between Will and Freddie, you know, cause now we know that she actually is alive and fine. And he's just trying to, you know, tell her not to talk to Abigail. You get these scenes between him and Hannibal, which I'm trying to wrap my head around, because it basically looks like we don't need to go through thing by thing here. The intent of their plan is, it looks like Hannibal is getting out of Dodge. You know, looks like he's getting rid of his notes and his journals. Will is helping them burn them, whatever. I kept thinking, I'm surprised Will doesn't try to pocket some of these, you know, just as proof, which is making me think maybe Will is not going to betray Hannibal after all. And is this the first time they talk about the Memory Palace, or had that? I feel like that might have been mentioned one other time before this. Did you remember if they said in any of the other episodes?
Yeah, I don't remember. I'm not sure.
And I also like the fact that there is that distinction between them, because Hannibal apparently has this vast memory palace, you know, with all these different rooms and chambers, both good and bad. And you could imagine the elaborate architecture kind of resembling the drawings he does. Whereas Will, he just needs a stream. His version is like, I'm just fishing in a stream. So it's the very complex to the very simple. I thought that was kind of interesting. And I guess it's around that point, then that's when I went, oh, that's the mistake he made. Because Hannibal smells Freddy on Will. And that's how he knows what's going on, how he picks up on what's going on now. I remember thinking this at the time. One of the frustrating things, I mean, it works for the show and the character, whatever, but it makes you kind of want to yell at the TV screen a little bit too. I remember watching season two, and I was getting so frustrated with Alana. And it's like, you know, it's like really, you don't see, you can't see. In fact, you know what? Never mind the fact that you don't pick up on what Hannibal's doing, because no one, you know, Hannibal's smart guy, I get all that. You don't think it's weird that you start hooking up with the guy that you were sort of had this weird romantic situation with in the first place is kind of obsessed with saying, like, he's the one who framed me. Oh, not only don't I believe you, I'm going to start sleeping with him too. What? You're the worst person ever.
he laid on the charm and kind of seduced her effectively. So I don't know. I think he was kind of tripping her trigger pretty good there, you know?
Yeah, wine and playing chopsticks got her into bed.
Chopsticks. Hey, it works for me. Give me some of that sweet chopsticks action.
Now I kind of want some Japanese food. So as we get through the episode, I like there's a scene where I think. My perception of how what they're trying to do here, Hannibal knows something's up. I mean, he pretty much knows what's happening. but he, I think he still wants to give Will the benefit of the doubt to get, or just test him to see if maybe, you know, he can convince him otherwise. When he suggests that they just leave tonight, and when, you know, and when Will kind of resists that, that's kind of like, I think that's what cinches it for Hannibal. And that's, I think that's what leads to the line when they, something along the lines of, you know, to the truth and all its consequences or something. Or maybe they're just a fan of really old game shows or something. Huh. Like, well, everybody under the age of 60 is not going to get that. And I'm not even over 60.
I just get it because I travel through that town in New Mexico sometimes that named themselves after that town or after that show.
Oh, that's right. Awesome.
South of Albuquerque. Yeah.
Wow, I love that I'm learning all these wacky names of towns in other states. I mean, first on Fargo, it turns out there actually is a town called Liberal, Kansas, and now there's a place, Truth of Consequences. It's awesome.
Yep.
Then we got the scene between Jack and Kate, or Kate Purnell, I think her character's name is. She's the investigator for the Office of Inspector General, where I guess he's filling her in finally on what they're doing. And then she's going on about it being entrapment, and I'm like going, is it really entrapment? And then she's like, she says something about inducing Lecter to murder. It's like, yeah, but that, but I was getting so frustrated with her, and I was like, no. If just by saying stuff to a person or putting in a situation where they decide to murder someone, then they're a murderer. You can't be saying no, because an upstanding person would not do that.
Yeah. It was pretty clueless, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't get why she was putting Jack in a situation where he had, like, you know, basically took his badge and gun at that point. I was like, luckily he has more than one gun, but I guess most FBI agents do. So then as it moves along, I think who is it who gets the call? I think it's when, Alana eventually calls Will that they're coming to arrest him. And she even mentions for entrapment and the murder of Randall Tier. And I guess I kept saying, no, it's not entrapment. I'm pretty sure. I mean, we don't have lawyer Brian here, but I'm pretty sure that would be a bullshit charge. That's the way I see it. But he does call Hannibal and he says they know. So again, now we flipped it again. It's like, okay, wait, he's telling him that they know. That's interesting. Again, it throws doubt into what the actual outcome is going to be as far as Will is concerned. And then we finally do get to the battle scene, and and they play aesthetically cute with their each of their reflections and their knives, Hannibal's knives of both Hannibal and Jack. And then they say that line about, you know, this is the clearest moment of our friendship, which means, oh, now they're going to try to kill each other. And so we see that entire scene play out. And what I liked about the fight between them is that, I mean, obviously Hannibal has trained himself, you know, over the years, because he's not, you know, he's definitely, you know, athletically inclined. But I like that even though he's an older agent at this point, you know, he's like, you know, whatever. And he's probably not as, you know, fit and trim as he might have been in his younger years. Jack Crawford can handle himself. And
oh, yeah.
Very well, in fact. And, you know, he flings Hamilton. He flings Hannibal around, you know, almost like a rag doll a couple times. And I kept thinking, yeah, if there's no knives around, I think Jack wins this fight. But if there's cutlery about, it's a different story. Again, he gets the cut on the neck. He's hot, and he kind of tries to. He doesn't really barricade himself, but he's hiding in the pantry. Hamilton's trying again, and that's when we're also Alana shows up and she's got the gun, you know, the gun that we had seen, you know, in a previous episode that Will gave her. So we knew it had to be used at some point. Cause I think they also, I don't know if it was this episode or a previous one where Hannibal even smelled the gunpowder on her finger that she's been practicing on the firing range or something. I don't know if they ever showed her doing that, but at least they indicated that she was doing that.
Right.
And that's when all of a sudden, Alana's smart. I was so blind. But Hannibal's line, like, in your defense, I worked so very hard to blind you. But of course, you know, she didn't think to check, you know. she's got no bullets. He took the bullets out. So I guess she runs upstairs and she gets more bullets, and which is great. She's loading the gun, whatever. Why are you wasting them firing at the door? You've only got a precious few. Why don't you make sure you actually hit the guy? And that's when Abigail Hobbs shows up. I believe I remembered that she shows up here. I think that was one of the things I remember, because it's like, if they never showed her actual death scene, then I know she didn't die. And then I was remembering, that's right, because she's, I remember thinking, she's going to die in a few more minutes. Or appear to die, I should say, because, you know, we find out otherwise in season 3. And again, it's all about Hannibal and his, how he just has, how he's able to manipulate and control people, where, you know, Abigail, Alana, this woman has done everything she can for you, cares so much about you and your welfare, and you go and you push her out the window. So she's out there lying on the ground, kind of, you know, maybe she's not dead, but you think maybe she might be badly injured. You know, who knows? Could be a spine, could be internal organs, whatever. Will shows up, and it's raining, because of course it's raining. And, you know, I think she tells him, you know, go, you know, again. I kind of go, hey, you know how many seconds it would take you to say Abigail is there too? That's how long. Like that. Doesn't tell him. So therefore, Abigail ends up being like kind of a bit of a distraction for Will. And that's when you get this moment where he's saying stuff to him like, you were supposed to leave. And you kind of wonder, wait, is Will pretending or not? Can't, whatever. And then you realize, doesn't matter if he has risen, because Hannibal thinks he is. And that's when we finally get to that infamous gutting with the linoleum knife, you know, which, like I said, was foretold in Red Dragon. And then he kills, or appears to kill, Abigail as well, which just leaves pretty much everybody's, you know, pretty much lying in a pool of their own blood at this point by the end of the episode. And I just love it because they're all so messy, you know, with this pools of blood just, you know, cascading everywhere. I think they even do a little shot where it's kind of a nod to The Shining. Oh, by the way, one other thing I forgot about watching the series again, how many times they reference The Shining on this show, at least, you know, as far as art design. I mean, in one episode, they basically recreate the famous red bathroom from The Shining. And in another episode, they recreate one of the famous hotel room that Jack goes in and sees the woman in the bathtub. They don't do the same carpeting or anything, but it's clearly the same setup. And I kept going, oh, I forgot about all the Shining stuff in this series. Anyway, I was just about at the end of the episode. Hannibal walks out. It's raining. I like that he just totally ignores Alana. I don't even think unless I missed the shot, I don't even think he looks at her. He just steps over her. And then, you know, credits roll, and then we see on an airplane, Bella and Hannibal are now together, and you know, they're drinking their champagne, and which takes us into season 3, which will take place overseas, like where all the financing comes for the show, I guess. Huh. So, I mean, I, watching the episode again, it felt really clear to me why this is the one that people pick as like the episode of Hannibal. Because I think it's not so much that there's any specific amazing, you know, scene, whatever. I think it's a series of scenes, actually. But I think it's just, it's a great culmination of what's built up for what you, for two seasons. Cause as you said, season one and season two just feels like one massive arc, you know, cause in classic old TV style, you know, TV seasons used to be, you know, 22, 24, 26 episodes. Hannibal, again, kind of new for TV back in 2000, when it started, 2013, just had 13 episode seasons on NBC. That seems, sounds kind of common now, but back then, not on network TV. That wasn't the way shows were done back then. So,
yeah, no, not at all.
So in a way, this could have been just like one massive season on NBC if they'd done like your traditional, again, in the 20s or whatever. But I think it just works in some way because it's a great payoff to so much that we'd seen. And the fact that the payoff is the hero doesn't end up triumphant unless you consider Hannibal the hero, in which case, yeah, you know, he does. and can you imagine how screwed up it would have been if NBC had decided to pull the plug after the second season instead of the third season? It would probably be the most notorious finale of all time. It's like, oh yeah, the one where it looked like they killed everybody and then we never knew what happened.
Yeah, that'd be like for a while the Twin Peaks finale was like that too, you know, because like they had like 10 cliffhangers at the end of season two. Cooper's fucked and you're just like, oh, this is never going to happen again. And then it happened again and none of it made, you know.
Yeah, that absolutely. That's Twin Peaks is one of the ones that used to, that frustrated me for so long. Oh, where, man, we ended with, you know, where I know it's not exactly what he's supposed to be saying, but I always thought it was like, you know, Annie M or whatever. Or where's Annie? Is it where's Annie?
Yeah. Yep, where's Annie?
And it's like, yeah. And then we're never going to get back to this. Yeah. You know what? They made up for it with they made up for what they did on Showtime, especially that eighth episode. You know, classic. One that would have made the podcast if we hadn't done a podcast about it. So, that would have been the pick for Twin Peaks. That would have been that episode. I put that one over the Dancing Dwarf episode. It's close, but it's different than anything we'd ever seen and probably ever will see on television. And did I mention on the podcast? I know I've mentioned it to you before. It still resulted in my favorite online comment about our podcast ever. Because that's the one that for some reason actually has been watched at least a few hundred times. Well, watched is, like, well, you know, watched on YouTube, which means you'd listen to it on YouTube because we don't do a video cast. And there's one comment on it. It's just four words. Your buddy was quiet. and Dan's the bigger Twin Peaks fan. I don't know.
Yeah, I must have been tired or something.
That was probably a combination of you being tired and me being blah, 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 blah. Anyway, so, yeah. Whatever. It works for us, so whatever.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like I said, I thought, I mean, it, and also, I mean, just as far as finales go, season finales go, obviously the fun / great season finales are the ones that leave you in a place where, oh Lord, where do you go from here?
Huh.
You know, and you can, yeah, you know, and you know, you can come up with there's a million examples, you know, either you can come up with a couple of ways, you know, Lost, a couple different seasons did that, you know, Breaking Bad did that. You know, all the shows that have a certain element of suspense, thriller aspect to them do that. Or even the aforementioned Dexter, when it ends with the, you know, Rita in the tub of blood, it's like, oh, that, but where do we go from here? And then it turned out, that's where you go. Anyway, still taking shots at the show. Okay, can't help it.
It's okay. I appreciate it.
So having watched these two seasons, so I did start thinking about what were the other really strong episodes of these two seasons. Although we had our issues, especially with the first half of the season, Putting aside the fact that we were frustrated that it turned out to be the final episode is actually a very good episode. I mean, I do think that's one of the best episodes of the series. It's just frustrating that it was the last episode. But I think that one worked really well, if I recall.
Yeah, it was pretty effective.
So I was thinking about it. So like in season one, I think you referenced one of them already. The two episodes that kind of stand out to me, and again, apologies if Mr. Mispronunciation here screws up these words, or I guess are French, if I recall. Sorry, it's French terminology in the first season, Japanese, and then Italian, right? So in season one, it was the episodes Fromage and Savoureux, I think. I might have mispronounced the I don't have Kelly. I don't have Kelly Smith here to correct me. Fromage is the one. That's the one where Hannibal. It's the one you were talking about. It's the one where Hannibal is increasingly annoying and clingy patient. Franklin. He's convinced that his friend Tobias might be a psychopath, and it turned out he was right. And I think that's. It's got that memorable. It's the thing you were referring to. It's got that memorable. The corpse is. It's. I think it's like a cello neck that's been impaled through the body or the neck of the victim, kind of turning the body into a musical instrument. So that was one of the more memorable episodes, and I would therefore say the finale of that season, which is what leads to Will being arrested and locked away, was also a standout. For me, in season two. I think when the eventual murder of the forensic tech, Beverly Katz, really stands out to me as one of the episodes that kind of stuck out to me. I have a couple other bits. Were there any episodes that kind of, and again, if you don't remember the title, don't worry about it. Just, you're going to say the one where whatever is fine. You know?
Yeah, no, I wouldn't say any of it really stood out. It just, you know, just kind of all blends together. It's like one big thing for me, you know, certain visuals are kind of, you know, stand out, and like the way they, you know, the cinematography works sometimes kind of stands out. But, you know, just, but, you know, I guess I'm more appreciative of the whole, I guess.
Well, that's fine. I mean, you can look at it this way. One way to kind of cement that kind of perspective. There are some shows, one maybe, you know, like The Wire. One rarely thinks of specific episodes of The Wire. It kind of all just kind of flows together as, you know, it's like the way they always describe it? They're like chapters in a book. You don't say, oh, I love chapter 7. You know, you just, just love the book. I say that knowing, you know, spoiler, there's a very likely chance The Wire is going to show up in this countdown down the road. But anyway, probably the only other episode that kind of stuck out for me, because it's the lifting off point before this episode, is the one just before the finale. I think it's called. And that's basically where the person who I have bound behind me over here, that's where Mason Verger ends up feeding his face to Will's dogs as well as eating his own nose. So I kind of enjoyed that. So that's about it. I mean, do you have any other thoughts on, you know, I mean, you invested, you know, 20 something hours watching it again. So, any other thoughts on the show or anything that kind of stood out or things you wish they had done differently or anything?
I don't really have too many complaints about the first couple of seasons. I don't think Abigail Hobbs has the best actress, but, you know, whatever. I guess she's playing somebody from Minnesota, so she doesn't have to be, like, super with it, I guess. Minnesota is cooler than Wisconsin, but it is upper Midwest, so, you know, we're all a bunch of fucking yokels up here.
Yeah, well, hey, both came through this year, so, you know, kudos to both states, finally.
Finally, yeah. About time the pig fuckers got their heads out of their asses. But it's a... Speaking of Mason Verger, but I was just impressed with the quality of the show, the consistent quality of the show. I mean, everything about it, the opening credits, the, you know, the special effects, like the way they get the the way they film stuff and, you know, the just, oh yeah, you know, all of it, like the, you know, things going in reverse visual effects and like the weird, like, whenever they do like a CGI stag or like, you know, Hannibal looking like a fucking horned demon or whatever, just like everything they do looks just, you know, nothing ever stands out as looking like shit. Everything is just super high quality.
Oh, it's a gorgeous, I mean, it's a gorgeous show. It's just,
no, yeah,
it looks awesome. Amazing. You know, I didn't realize until I was looking into it this time around that that's a different actor playing, you know, Hannibal as if he was a stag with the horns, whatever. I just assumed it was Mikkelsen, but it's actually, it's some other guy the whole time. And I just didn't know that. I thought it was him. I mean, maybe they have similar faces, but it's a different actor playing that. So that I never knew.
Thanks. Yeah.
There was something else along those lines. I'm trying to remember. It was just, I love when things pop in and out of my head while I'm recording. So we get the, you know, I get the lovely kind of, what was I going to say? Another fun thing about watching it this time around that I didn't know watching it, several years ago. For example, the fellow they have playing Dr. Chilton, I think the actor's name is, I think it's like Raul Esparza.
Yeah.
I didn't know that he's actually a worldwide acclaimed stage actor and musicals. Like he's, if you look him up on, say, like YouTube or something, there's a very famous song. Being Alive, you know, which I won't torture you by singing any of it here, but.
Oh,
you know, no, I'm not going to do it. And neither is Roger.
Oh. Oh.
Yeah, fuck you. Did I just drop the first time? Anyway. No, it's one of those things. If you look it up, because, you know, you'll see other actors do it as well. You'll see Neil Patrick Harris do it in one production, whatever. But he's like the guy. And I think he's the one who's won all the awards for it. And it's like, I didn't know that, because when you watch the show, you don't realize, oh, that's like a classically trained Broadway musical performer. Also a guy who I think kind of triumphs and does at least as good, if not better, job than how we had seen that character depicted in the movies. Because I always remember the actor who we'd seen in a number of things who played him in Silence of the Lambs. And I thought the guy who plays Chilton in this does an excellent job. And actually, if there's a reason to get to season 3, I do seem to remember there's a great scene between Chilton and Verger where I believe they compare and contrast their respective horrific faces. Because apparently, you know, I think Chilton's face is all screwed up as well from maybe it's from the bullet wound.
Yeah. And I think he gets burned at some point, right? Yeah.
I think so. This is the show where there's so many people who are like, you should be dead, you should be dead, you should be dead, you should be dead, and somehow they're not dead. You know? I mean, Abigail Hobbs, you've had your throat slashed twice within a few weeks of each other or months, whatever. You should not be alive. Huh. The way blood was gushing out of Jack's throat there, you should not be alive. You know? Will, you were gutted. No. I mean, Alana's the one who got thrown out a window, but at least, okay, it's only like the second floor. I totally believe that. That should be fine. But all the ones who are bleeding out of the kitchen, no. Dead, 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 dead. Paul Chilton gets a bullet. First, Paul Chilton gets his gut. He gets disemboweled. The fact that he survived that is already kind of like, really? And then he gets shot in the head. And then Verger rips his entire face off. What's with the show? Anyway. So I'll just sum up by saying I was more than thrilled to watch the show again. I had not actually planned to watch both seasons in their entirety. I knew you were doing it.
Yeah.
I kind of thought I wouldn't. And it hooked me because I watched the first one and I was, again, was like we were saying, I was kind of, oh, I'm surprised by how much I'm not remembering here. Maybe I'll watch the next one. I'll watch it. And next, at a certain point, I think I got like 5 or 6 episodes deep into season one, and I realized I think I'm going to end up watching both seasons now. All right. Might as well. Yeah. It's not torture.
It's just a good show, you know. They do such a good job.
Yeah, it's a great show, and wish that we could have gotten more resolution to it, but by the same token, I'm willing to accept how it ended, because it did have kind of a, oh, that's show's over, guys, kind of an ending.
Is there anybody in any of the movies that you would rather play any of the characters in this show at any time?
You mean...
Like if you could recast any of the characters in the show with somebody that played that character in the movies, you know?
Oh, I see what you're saying. Mikkelsen stands out on his own, so I don't miss Hopkins at all as a result. And plus, you know, Hopkins is also a much older Lecter.
Yeah.
I do not specifically care that much for... There's been at least two screen depictions of Will Graham, I guess.
Yeah.
I guess it was William J. Peterson in that Manhunter movie. Nah, he's a bore. Sorry, he is. And yeah. Was it Edward Norton who played him?
Yeah.
In that?
Yeah.
That
Red Dragon, yeah.
The proof that you can have an amazing cast, but if you have a hack director, it's just not worth it. I mean, the cast for that movie is amazing, but it just never feels like anything because, well, Brett Ratner directed it, and there you go. Matt, you know. So I would not... I would leave Dancy alone. I really... You know what? I really like Lawrence Fishburne in the role, so I'm okay with him as Crawford. Although, at the same time, I really like... I think it was Scott Glenn, I think?
Yeah. He is good.
Yeah, Scott Glenn is really good. That, I remember when I've seen Silence of the Lambs both the first time and any number of times I've seen it since. But it was always part of me that wished, I kind of wish we got a bit more Scott Glenn in this, because I really like his depiction of that character. And he does play, I think he plays a somewhat more significant part when you read the book. There's just more screen time with him. And they play more on the relationship between Crawford and Lecter. And now when you watch what they did on this TV series, you can kind of see if this was in any way the thinking of Thomas Harris to a certain extent, yeah, there should be a lot more dealings between them. So that's as much as I like Fishburne, I kind of miss Scott Glenn, but not to the point where I would recast him. I can't think of anybody else. Wait, and then was it Dennis Farina who played him in the Manhunter? Was that Crawford?
That sounds right. I don't really remember the character in Manhunter. I just remember Tom Noonan did a really good job as the the dragon or whatever.
He did up to a point. It's just my issue with that movie, and I know a lot of people love that movie, and I get it. But I was, that was 1986.
It was 1986, all right.
Oh shit! Wow, 1986. Okay, so I'm a teenager seeing the movie, and I probably had already read Red Dragon. Those are the days that not only did I read, I would reread books even. God, I was smart back then. I loved that book so much, and I got so upset with how they just, like, wait, what's all this crap? What's this whole Inagata the Vita thing and crashing? I'm like, no, there's so much good stuff you could have done that just felt so cinematic, and you did the... So I don't love the movie the way other people do, but I do like Tom Noonan a lot, and I did think he was a good choice for that character. But I just didn't like where they went with the movie. But he's a great fun character actor, so can't really go wrong with him. There are a few people, other people on the show that don't quite stand out as much as others. Maybe, I mean, is the actress who plays Alana Bloom a great actress? She's okay.
Yeah.
But I have to figure out, I think my issues are more with just the character rather than the actress playing the character. I think she does, she does whatever she can with the part. I just feel like, oh, you're so stupid.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
And I love, I had almost forgotten about Scott Thompson being on the show. I just love the odd casting. It's like, this is a guy who is basically known for Kids in the Hall, and now he's working in, you know, in the, well, he's a forensic scientist dealing with all the, right, all the dead bodies and whatnot. So well said. You know, it's getting near the end of the podcast where I'm having a problem articulating very simple thoughts, and it might be the alcohol too.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I had forgotten watching one of the episodes that they actually dropped the line, half the line in a scene when, I guess Alana and Lecter are in bed, and I think it's when the doorbell rings, and they, and I love, you know, they had to be cute. He mentioned a census taker came to my door once, and I was like, oh, look at them being funny here. They're riffing on the, probably one of the most famous lines from Silence of the Lambs. That's probably one of the most overt references to Silence of the Lambs by throwing in the census taker line there. Not the whole thing, just part of it. I did wonder though, so what, were only random meats served that were human as opposed to animal flesh at Lecter's party, and Jack just happened to pick all the ones that didn't have human? Because I think one of the things Lecter gets off on is the fact that he actually feeds his guests human as well.
Yeah, I think I got the impression that, like, at that party, like, Hannibal knew that they were kind of onto him at that point, so yeah, then everything at the party would be fine, because he kind of, and he was, because, you know, there was something that tipped him off.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think, and they were just doing a little cute bait and switch with us, but showing all, I also love the whole little running gag through the show of looking up both recipes and the business cards of people who are going to be who he'd be killing, you know, for that meal. I kind of got a kick out of that. Oh, and I loved, and just one last thing, I loved him feeding Gideon his own legs and stuff. That was, I really enjoyed that. So that I enjoyed, as opposed to, you know, the movie Hannibal, where, you know, Ray Liotta is eating part of his own brain or whatever the heck it is in that movie. I really hated that movie. I'm sorry. I just really hated it. All right. I guess I should probably move things along and get to the end here. All right. So that's pretty much, I guess, all we're going to be saying about this. Oh, Jesus Christ. Sorry about that. So professional. I could have.
Was that Mason? Was that a hook lowering a body into a pig pit?
It was me trying not to drop my iPhone on my foot. Is what it was. It could have been really bad. So hearing a slight crash is probably better than hearing me scream. Anyway, so I'm just trying to get to the end here. All right. So now that we've completed this discussion on Hannibal, well, this is the part where I mentioned what's going to be upcoming. What's the next one? You know, looking back on the countdown so far, and, you know, guys out there, if you've missed any of these, you can look them up in a few places that, you know, I'll be mentioning in the wrap-up, of course. You know, we had number 20, House's Head, which is a season 4 episode of House. Number 19 was The Getaway, season 2 finale of Dexter. Number 18 was Out of Gas, the 8th episode of Firefly, of course, the one and only season of Firefly. Number 17 was 407 Proxy Authentication, the 7th episode from the fantastic 4th and final season of Mr. Robot. Y'all just listened to number 16, which was Ms. Yamuno, the season 2 finale of Hannibal, of course. So that would mean it is now time to reveal the next number coming in at number 15 on the greatest TV drama episodes of all time. Wait for the symbol crash, because I didn't time it correctly. It will be Hitting the Fan, which is the 5th episode from season 5 of The Good Wife. Court Robinson will be rejoining the podcast to talk about that one. Some of you out there might recall Court and I actually paired up a few years ago for a two-part podcast that was titled Goodbye to the Good Wife. So, of course, she had to return for this one. However, that's not going to be released until December 4th. So y'all are going to be, if you're listening to this, well, you probably aren't listening to this on Thanksgiving. Hopefully you guys, which would be it. Oh, that would be fascinating. Unless you're listening to it on the drive over to someone's house. If you're, you know, have less than 10 people and you're wearing your masks and stuff. But just remember, you're going to have to sign up for CBS All Access if you haven't already to track down and watch that episode. And, you know, you'll have plenty of time, got like a week and a half. You might as well watch several others because I know that I'll be doing that. And as you might guess, I can't say what the shows are, kind of sticking to my rules here, but Dan will be returning for a few more on the countdown over the next few weeks. Basically, there's shows that I couldn't envision doing them without having Dan here. So
yeah, Frasier, Cheers.
Frasier, Cheers, and Drivers, Drivers, Diners, Drive-ins, and
oh yeah, Triple D. Yeah, the episode where they go to that. I can't think of anything specific. That Chicago pizza place.
Really, you had to bring it back. Had to bring it pizza up. All right. So let me just wrap things up here. If you enjoyed this podcast, guess what? You'll enjoy hanging out on our Facebook page as well. It's the Serious TV Drama Podcast page. You can like the page and talk about shows like Hannibal or anything that's currently on it. You can talk about whatever you want there. You can subscribe to our feed on Apple Podcasts, where you can also rate and review us. You can actually find us on Stitcher now. It would be nice to get one download there. You got to go, if you want to try to find us specifically, go to stitcher.com/podcast/the-serious-tv-drama-podcast. Maybe you can just find us putting our name in Stitcher. I don't know. But obviously, you can find our entire archive of podcasts on our host page at stbdpodcast.podbean.com. This will be number 280. There'll be 287 podcasts there at this point. And finally, you can follow us on Twitter. Our handle there is at stvdpodcast. That's STVD as in Serious TV Drama Podcast. That's it. Dan, I was glad you were able to return, come out of your sabbatical, retirement, or whatever it is.
No, I crawled my way out of hell, and now I'm back, even though I'm still kind of tired, but I'll wake up one of these times.
Yeah, you know, it's almost eerily appropriate. No,
I'm kidding.
But meanwhile, I'll be the one getting the crap. It's like, you don't let Dan talk.
It's truly, he's threatening to make me eat my own face if I talk too much. He's basically pointing a gun at me. Well, this is a video podcast, and he's threatening me. Please save me, people. Please save me with a 5-star review. I like that one shitty 1-star review. Fuck that guy.
You know what? I'll say this about that 1-star review, which is funny you should bring that up, because I thought about this some weeks ago. The one good thing about that 1-star review, that I think that specifically caused a massive spike in downloads of that specific podcast, because that one is one of our 10 most listened to podcasts. And I was thinking, really, that one? I mean, I'm not saying it wasn't a good podcast. I mean, I've listened to it. I have. It's one of those. I wish one of us had done the production, post production on it, instead of how it was done. But that wouldn't be a reason to downgrade it. And as far as that guy's comments, he's like 50-50. It was like, you know, it wasn't perfect, but it wasn't 1-star. It wasn't a 1-star podcast. You know, 2.5, 3 maybe. But I'm going, God, this has got a lot of people listen to this one. I was like, oh, it's because of that stupid review. Now, either that caused people to not want to listen to any other ones, or inspired people to listen to other ones, I have no idea. The same way I don't know if having, you know, what's his name back is going to cause a spike in this one. I don't know if I should take the tape off his mouth or not. Although we are at the end of the podcast, so hold on. Let me see if I can wheel him over here. I can't reach. God damn it. By the way, that was literally me trying to bend over to pick up this tape. and not try to fall off the chair with the goddamn foot. So anyway. All right.
Ah. Good Lord, I was napping the whole time. You can talk. Anyway, thanks for bringing me back, guys. It was good to see Dan. Not you.
Well, I already have an agreement with Mr. Verger here that if we should get like a massive spike in listens and downloads, which I doubt, but if that should happen, and if he can prove it's because of him, there may be a Mason Verger podcast in the future. It would just be blessedly short because one can only that voice can only be done for about 20 minutes in a row without driving someone insane.
Speak for yourself, asshole.
Anyway, so Dan, again, thanks for coming back. Thanks for returning.
Yeah.
And thanks to everyone out there for listening. Hope you enjoyed it. And oh, I've never done this with Dan before. I'm gotten so used to saying this to whoever I'm co-hosting with.
Scott, I love you too. Good night. Click.
I can't do better than that. All right, good night, everybody.